First, I want to say thank you to the hundreds of you, many more than that really, who sent us good wishes on the staff and cards and presents indeed, and especially to thank the anonymous donor who knows how much I dislike drafts. He or she will know what I mean. Then to tell you that the collection baskets that are outside the church are for two things this carol service. First, for the Karamoja area in Uganda, and this will go through the auspices of the Tear Fund, who are very careful to see that money gets to the right object through the right people. And the other half of our collection today, which usually runs into hundreds, I wish I could say thousands of pounds, goes to the Spitalfields Crypt, now I think without their government grant, one of the most important works amongst homeless men in East London, our very near neighbour along the road, as you probably know. I hope you'll give very generously as you leave the church. All three doors will be open. The baskets are outside. And then one other note is to say that we start again on Tuesday, on January the 6th, and we start with a crash course in Christian growth. And I hope that every person who calls himself a Christian here will be present at 1:05, and you will bring all your Christian friends, because there comes a time when we Christians need to learn once again how to show forth Christ to our fellow men if we're to win them in 1981. A crash course in Christian growth, January the 6th for four Tuesdays. Now those of you who are regulars here, and that is many of you, on a Tuesday, will know the verse in the Bible that has been on our minds and that I intended to have for today. It's one of the grandest statements in that last reading. John chapter 1, verse 5. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. A very few weeks ago, I was driving a retired city man to Waterloo. As we went along the road, he said, "It was just here that over 60 years ago, I heard a paper man call out, 'Star News Standard,'" that shows how long it was ago, "'Star News Standard, Jerusalem Fallen.'" Well, that actually is 1917, so he must have been a youngster in the city in that day. Now, I wonder if there will ever be a day when the paper man, he won't be, of course, saying more than standard, but I wonder whether he'll be shouting out something like this: "Christianity finally disproved. Last churches in Britain closed this weekend. End of a 2,000-year-old era. Dr. Aggie Nostick, first female bishop and chairperson of the British Council of Churches, declares, 'What I've expected and worked for has come. Now the old myths are exploded, and we can work together for a more caring and compassionate society. The light of pure science must guide us in the future.'" Well, you can't really say anything, can you, more stupid than what actually happens. So probably something worse than that will happen from some chairman of the British Council in the 1980s. But in answer to whatever people like that may say, 2,000 years ago, to use a rather inelegant phrase, the Apostle John stuck his neck out. He said, "The light shines in the darkness." And he was talking, of course, about a tiny little movement. "And the darkness has not overcome it." And he makes a statement very boldly for the whole of time there. And 2,000 years ago, in this church, we can say, "Yes, John, you were absolutely right." Let me use the Star, the News, and the Standard to illustrate the simple point that the light has come into the world and the darkness has not overcome it. First of all, the Star. At Christmas, that reminds us immediately of the story that was read in the second lesson, Matthew chapter 2. The story of how the star guided men to where the baby Jesus was, and how a very ruthless and able king, Herod the Great, in extreme jealousy and suspicion, murdered every baby under two in the Bethlehem District Council area. What a man he was. He was so suspicious of plots against himself that he actually murdered members of his own family in the course of his time. What a ruthless thing that was to do, to try to kill Jesus at source by going into every home and taking out every baby and slaughtering it like a piece of meat. But it is futile to try to defeat God. Some of us have discovered that this year and surrendered at last. Jesus was in Egypt, safe. But ever since then, I think the star stands, and Herod stands, for those powers of darkness that try to destroy the Christian church. Let me give just one example, and of course I could give many. The Red Guards in China in the last 15 years. Leslie Lyle, a great missionary statesman, talking of that year, 1951, when he and many others said goodbye to their Chinese Christian friends, writes this very recently. To say that it was heartbreaking to bid goodbye to all those Chinese Christians in every province is a considerable understatement. We knew that a fiery trial lay ahead for them, to which there might be no end. As the years went by, the news grew steadily worse until the final blow came in 1966. The second all-out attempt to destroy the church in this century, this time by the Red Guards of the Cultural Revolution, left the Christian church without buildings, without Bibles, without any remaining organizational structure, certainly no carol services. Many lost their lives. 6 years of silence followed. The question haunted us. Had the church survived? Now we know that it not only survived, stop your coughing for a moment, but Chinese Christians may be more numerous today than ever before. That's a very powerful exposition, isn't it, of John chapter 1, verse 5. The light shined in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. The star. The news. Christianity, obviously, as the angel said, is good news of great joy. But of course it didn't sound like that, especially when Jesus, having grown up and beginning to teach as a rabbi, immediately just started to talk in a very disconcerting way about his death. That seemed to be the heart of what he wanted to say, and it didn't sound very much like good news. If I wanted to choose my favorite verse on this, I think it would be in Mark 14:8, where Jesus, just before his betrayal and his crucifixion, is in an upper room, and somebody has poured ointment over him, and people have criticized it. And then he starts saying some very mysterious things about how this woman has anointed him for his burial. And as he talks about his coming death, everybody, especially the disciples, are absolutely cast down in gloom. And then listen to what he says. I love this a little bit. Just imagine it. A man with a very few followers, hunted, in a small room, soon to die, in a quite unimportant part of the world, with nobody listening, no journalists. And he says this: "She has done what she could. She has anointed my body beforehand for burial. And truly I say to you in this room that wherever this good news is preached in the whole world, what she has done will be told in memory of her." Isn't that a breathtaking thing to say? Everybody cast down, talking about his death, that death which was going to reconcile us to God and God to us and help us to live with one another through Christ. He says, this good news, the good news of my death, will be told in the whole wide world. I want to tell you at this time of celebrating Christ's birth that Christians are really keen on celebrating his death. Every time we break bread in church and pour out the bread and wine, we celebrate not his birth, but his death. Isn't that a strange thing? Because he was born to die. Because his death is the very center of the gospel. Because it was by bearing our sins in his own body on the tree that he took away my guilt and sin, made it possible for me to know God and for you to know God, and it made it possible for the enmity also to be dispersed between man and man. You can know God in 1981, if you don't know him now, through Jesus Christ and his death. And that good news is spreading in the city, thank God. It's spreading in the churches. A friend of mine went to a church some time ago, and after he'd been preaching for a few weeks, the very few people in the church said, he said, what you're saying is quite new. We've never heard this before. Well, he said, as a matter of fact, what I'm telling you is quite old, 2,000 years. See, the church has so often lost the message, hasn't it? He brought the good news back, and it's spreading in the world. I have here on my desk here Operation World. It's really rather an exciting book. It tells a story, for those who want to pray, of every part of the world today and what is happening in the Christian church. I find it most exciting to read this in the morning. Pacific, Pakistan, Panama, Papua New Guinea, Paraguay, Peru, Philippines, Poland, Portugal, Portuguese Guinea, Port of whatever it is, Puerto Rico. So it goes on. And in every one of those places, the light is shining, and the darkness has not been able to overcome it. John, you were right. The good news now is throughout the world, the only worldwide religion, the light of Christ. The standard. Star, news, standard. Well, the standard, of course, that Christ brought into the world is under attack today as never before. As the light of the gospel has gone out in so many people's lives in this last generation or two, the darkness has come in again, and the standards have been forgotten. We're going to have to fight for them all over again. Let me give you just three quick examples. First, truthfulness, trustworthiness, and integrity. That's part of the light that Christ brings into our hearts. And incidentally, on that was based the prosperity of the City of London. And no gigantic mergers with American firms, no rearranging of our business will save the city in terms of what the city has been unless the light of trustworthiness and truth and integrity come back. And only Christ can bring it. Peace in our streets. No amount of squads of police, oceans of social workers, better prisons and borstals, none of those things will work and bring peace on our streets, amongst our people, between classes, unless the light shines again. Purity and loyalty in family life. Now, no amount of marriage guidance counselors, no amount of young love, no amount of romantic films, no amount of good advice, no amount of exhortation will bring us back Christian family life and Christian love, to which most of us in this church owe so much as we look back to our own families. That's Christ's light. Nobody else can bring it. And without him, the darkness will engulf us again. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. Thank God for that.